Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your hosts, Matty Wood,
Matthew Davis,
and the Roto Gut, Vlad Sedler.
Guess who's back? Back again. Baseball's back. Oh, baby, everybody. Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your co-host, Vlad Sedler, along with my man, Matty Wood Davis, and baseball is back.
What's good, everybody? We are thrilled to be here this evening. I have a cold beer in my hand, and I am eager to see this Freddie Freeman get done this evening while we are recording tonight, covering all of the free agency transactions and trades that we have seen over the last 48 plus hours. How's it going, Vladdy?
I'm good. Because if we were still in a lockout, this would probably be our relief pitcher segment, our final one, because we've been covering basically all of the positions a little bit at a time. The last one left is relief pitchers. But thankfully, a lot has changed in 1 week. And, this time last week was the ultimate doom and gloom. I mean, like, you know, I know people like had tears in our eyes, like from literally just the lows of potentially not knowing when the season would start, all the madness and mischief that had been going on with baseball. And now we actually have it back. It feels so good. This past week just feels like, I don't know, man, it's incredible. I myself have never felt so locked in and ready for a baseball season. I think part of the reason with that is the responsibility that we have for to the subscribers at FTN, making sure everything is up to date as far as our articles, as far as the projections. I mean, you know, we're sitting here before recording talking about Andrew Chafin and how he's going to be, Brad Hand and Juris Familia, and how these guys are affecting our overall projections and our numbers and what the market movement is and all that. It's so exciting. Like every single part of this is just amazing. And the next week we go to Vegas, and then the week after that, the season starts. And then of course we still have all of our big drafts online. So it's a good time to be a fantasy baseball fan.
It is much more exciting to be able to talk about Kyle Schwarber, Nelson Cruz, Eddie Rosario, Anthony Rizzo, potentially Freddie Freeman, Matt Olson, Chris Bryant, etc., instead of trying to decipher if Tanner Rainey or Rowan Wick or somebody else is going to get the job done when we draft them in the 20 plus round with tears in our eyes, while potentially we weren't going to be getting to hang out in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. But it looks like and sounds like this is going to potentially be one of the largest years we've had in Las Vegas at the NFBC. Looks like the main event is going to completely fill out. I know that seats are limited for that on the big draft day, which is Saturday, March 26th. I did not say April for the first time in the last couple weeks. Apologies, because I've been getting my dates really mixed up. But I'm really, really excited to talk baseball with you today. We have a loaded outline filled with tons of content, and we will talk about the fantasy impacts and relevance to all of them.
Yes. And by the way, if anyone is heading out to Las Vegas, especially if it's your first time and you don't know anybody, we set up something special actually in Las Vegas. It's that Friday, March 25th, and around 3:30, right before the 4 p.m. Sweet 16 game start, we're going to do an FTN happy hour, have some cocktails and some snacks, and welcome you all to join us if you're going to be in Las Vegas and are a part of the NFBC. Definitely check out our timeline there on Twitter to know all the details about that. And then shout out to the MTM party in the evening. Again, if you're an NFBC player, you're going to want to get into that and rub elbows with the Lindy Hinkelmans and John Posmas of the world, and maybe rub elbows with Masato himself.
that's right. And come early to our happy hour party, because apparently Carter Gill is going to show up. So you want to beat him to that race, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Then happy hour's over. Drinks are gone. Yeah. Shout out Carter. So let's get into it here. We're gonna cover all the free agent signings, hitters, pitchers, trades, everything that's gone down over the last week, and everything really got started on the 11th, last Thursday, and that's when Carlos Rodon and the first domino hit. And actually, kind of a shocker, because the market was kind of down. The fantasy market was down on Carlos Rodon for the single fact, and you know, I kind of hate to generalize the market, but for the most part, most people were down on Rendon. He was slipping from like, you know, 130-ish ADP to like 170, a couple rounds there, simply because the White Sox declined their QO for him. And obviously that was a sign of, you know, some concern with his arm. And so one of the sharpest teams in baseball, and obviously ran by Farhan Zaidi, former Dodgers executive, they signed Carlos Rodon to a two-year contract, comes out to about $21 million per season, or $22 million per season. But that's kind of what kicked things off. Before we jump into Rodon, I do want to get into the hitters. And as you mentioned in the beginning of the show, as we are recording on the evening of, it's the 16th, March 16th, which is a Wednesday night, there is discussion about Freddie Freeman finally getting finalized. Obviously, Matt Olson going to the Braves really kind of changed things. Freddie Freeman today officially said his goodbyes to Atlanta. And there have been a lot of rumors since the weekend, at least with a couple of my sources from earlier this week, that everything was like good to go with Freddie. And really, we don't know what sort of happened over the past week. We've heard Toronto Blue Jays had been interested. There's been whispers about, the Boston Red Sox and some other teams. But at the end of the day, or so it looks like, as Ken Rosenthal reported, Freeman is looking at around 6 years and somewhere in the vicinity of $160 million for the term of the contract. That's a little under $27 million per year. But yeah, let's hope that happens, man. That'd be quite the impact.
Yeah, after Olson got traded to the Braves and then inked his long-term contract, the Yankees get Anthony Rizzo. There was some steam potentially there. And then along with Matt Chapman going to third base, that kind of plugs, you know, the hole for the potential or possibility of Vladimir Guerrero moving back over there. Didn't think that was really going to happen, but there was some talk of that. It kind of gave the Dodgers some leverage, right? At the end of this, we thought that they were going to be in a pissing contest of sorts. And the sounds of the contract that we're hearing and what you just said that Ken Rosenthal was tweeting out about, that sounds okay with me. I would be pretty happy with that, to be quite honest with you. And thinking of a Trey Turner, Freddie Freeman, Mookie Betts, 1-2-3, splitting them righty lefty righty is it's pretty lethal. That's a brutal top of the lineup. And I think they would all get a substantial. Well, it's hard to give them a substantial bump, I should say, but I would feel pretty damn good, even a little bit more comfortable with their floor that they already have. All of them.
Yeah. And I'm, yeah, if you look
increase
at
that, increase that ceiling a little bit too.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And kind of the confluence of events when they're all mashing at the same time. I mean, just like so many potential runs to be scored, a lot of 10 plus outings, 10 plus run outings for those guys. You know, if you look at VDP, I was already a little bit higher than the market on Freddie Freeman. I've been happy in places where I was able to get him in the sort of mid to end first round of 15 teamers around 25, 27. Obviously, that's a steal. If you're looking at my draft projections, I've got them basically like right at the end of the first round, like, you know, 12 to 15. That's kind of where I've had them and have been pretty solid with him there, just because, you know, granted, doesn't steal a lot of it. He's not going to get you 10 plus steals, but just everything else is solid. He's really locked in, and kind of knowing that there was a chance that he was going to come to the Dodgers and really trying to jump the market to that, you know. So I've been all over Freddie for those reasons, and just thinking of the impact he would have in that lineup and possibly even a career season, even though he's a little bit you know, obviously on the wrong side of a quote unquote breakout year 27. He's, you know, a few years older than that, but man, it would be phenomenal. Obviously, it would even solidify Trey Turner even more so after the Tatis injury. Would solidify Turner as number one overall pick. So I love it. I love it. Falling off from that, obviously, is Matt Olson, who was traded from the A's. A's are in the midst of a fire sale. He signs for 8 years. He signed that contract yesterday, the day after he was traded. Matt Olson, 8 years, $21 million per season, and his ADP is already shooting up. I was in a draft the other day, started a 50-round DC where basically he was picked, I think, sort of middle, early third round, so like 35 overall. We had seen his ADP in the 40s, in some case the 50s, and now he's pretty locked in that 30 to 40 range, where there are kind of a lot of guys that I think people don't feel necessarily comfortable with hitter wise like the Cedric Mullinses of the world, the Whit Merrifields kind of coming off his big season and maybe not expecting a whole bunch of stolen bases. So he's a nice, solid bat in that range. And I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the value goes up even more because you're getting out of that horrendous situation in Oakland, which is kind of a pitcher's park anyways. You're going to Atlanta with this lineup. Okay, eventually Acuna will be back. You got Ozzie Albies there. You got some more support with Eddie Rosario re-signing. Like, this lineup is stacked, and Matt Olson can have a monster year.
Yeah, so starting with the home run park factor, right? So looking at StatCast baseball park factors, Oakland Coliseum is 18% below the league average. And then looking at Truist Park. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah, so they're sorry. Yelling it's at us.
Truist, Truist. Yeah, no, and so that's around league average. But then when you switch it to left-handed hitters, it goes way above that. It goes from 101, which is just 1% above league average. It goes all the way up to 109, so which is top 10 in the league. So when you look at that, the home run park factor is a substantial upgrade. And then you mentioned the team context as well. Going to have Ozzie Albies, Ronald Acuna Jr. at some point, Eddie Rosario, Travis d'Arnaud, Austin Riley. So it's a loaded lineup with a better ballpark factor. The big question, right, is who do you like more? That's what the people want to know, Vlad. That's what they want to ask you. Who do you like more if you had a pick and you were on the clock and you had to choose? Was it Matt Olson or is it Pete Alonso?
Oh, it's Matt Olson. It's not even close for me. I've got them at least 1.5 rounds apart. I've actually, over the last few weeks, I've been really getting in on some Paul Goldschmidt just because I'm trying to get myself into the main event mindset where, again, we've discussed it before, it's a little bit more cash game-ish as opposed to GPP because in the onlines, the 12-team championships, those are a few thousand teams in there. We're shooting for upside. We can grab the Mondesi types on those teams and really take some risks. In the main events, against some of these solid players that have been playing for a while, fantasy managers, you want to really be careful and balance out that that upside with some solid picks. And so wrapping my head around those sort of Freddie Freeman, Paul Goldschmidt types, just been really into them. And I don't know, I'm rambling here, but the point is that
you like Matt Olson a lot more than Pete Alonso.
Yes. I got onto a Goldschmidt tangent just because like he's just just solid, just all around. What I'm saying is I'm okay with the guys that maybe don't steal bases in those early rounds as long as I sort of have a plan for it. So Olson won't get you the steals. He'll get you solid three categories, maybe even average in a good outlier year. So for me, especially it's the team context, I think, is a little bit stronger for me, especially you didn't even mention Marcell Ozuna and Dansby Swanson. Those guys will be hitting more in the lineup, but Studley.
It's a stacked lineup. And just to cap it off, Matt Olson's ADP, he is now on average over the last 2 weeks in NFBC draft champions. He's the third first baseman going off the board with an ADP of 45 and a min pick of 33. So, he's heating up.
Yeah. And so, this is a crazy one. This just happened today when we recorded on Wednesday evening, March 16th. Chris Bryant signs with the Colorado Rockies. This is actually the biggest deal so far, and it's a monster. 7 years, comes out to $26 million per season. And of course, the Rockies are getting all kinds of crap because it's like, what are you doing? You just had no, do you know what you're doing? Like, what direction are you going in? And I think right then they have some like executive or somebody that they hired before the season and they just fired him. But like you didn't sign Arenado or you didn't want to keep him, kind of let him go. And then you signed Chris Bryant, who was like, 30 years old, to this monster 7-year deal for like insane amount of money. And you're not even really competing. Like what's going on with that?
That's weird. And I'm not really sure why they would do that, to be quite honest, but I am happy that they did something. I'm glad that they did shell out some money. I don't want to see just ownerships that have billions of dollars, especially in a fantastic economy in Colorado. I don't want to see a billionaire sit with his hands underneath his ass in his rich office. So I'm glad that they did end up shelling out some money to somebody. And as a fantasy fan or player or analyst, we've got to be excited about this, right? He's going to skyrocket up in ADP. Over the last 2 weeks, it's 107 with a min of 99. That is no mas. That is going to be long gone. Throw that out the window. do not digest that any further. The question now becomes, how high does he go? Does he go above Alex Bregman? I say yes. Nolan Arenado, I say yes. Austin Riley, I've talked to some people, they say no. I say yes. Adalberto Mondesi, dependent on, you know, that if you're that person that's reaching or looking to go Adalberto Mondesi and take that liability and upside and you're wanting the stolen bases, I would go Chris Bryant. So the conversation becomes now he's getting closer to the Manny Machados. And I certainly don't think that he'll go in the third round where Manny Machado was going on average. But the one thing I would want to ask is, where were we drafting Nolan Arenado in 2019 while he wasn't providing stolen bases? And albeit Nolan Arenado might have career metrics that show a little bit more power, we do know Chris Bryant possesses that. And I think that there is a ceiling that could be untapped here. And I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. And I'm not saying that I would draft Chris Bryant in the third round like people were doing with Nolan Arenado. But I think the discussion becomes, how far up does he go?
Yeah, I'm going to pat myself on the back a little bit because today I was in a position in my final draft champions, these 50-round draft and holds, and it was the ninth round, and I decided that I was going to grab I saw good news on Anthony Rendon, and I'm like, okay, I have a lot of shares. Sorry, let's do shares in quotations based on Twitter today.
Rob Silver's going to be mad at us.
Yeah. Well, I have, okay, let's say 35% Anthony Rendon. And that's kind of a lot for a guy that hasn't been healthy for the last couple of years, but I'm a fan of him. And so today I was thinking about it and I was like, you know what, Chris Bryant, let me see what's going on here. Oh, talking to the Rockies. Ooh, maybe that might work out. So, you know, I had a little post, a little tweet with, I'm drafting Chris Bryant here. Could it be prescient? And I had basically like, I think it was lead singer from Foo Fighters, Dave Grohl, like drinking a Coors, Yeah. So of course, you know, I got to pat myself on the back when he got signed. I was like, woo, just, you know, you kind of hit one there and it worked out. The problem is it was only my first share of Chris Bryant. He was just one of those guys where I was like, okay, you know, usually if somebody is unsigned and I like them, I'm willing to take a bet and kind of get ahead of the market on them and draft them before their value goes up. I never felt like I was in a place with Chris Bryant where I kind of really wanted to jump and go there. And part of that is just, you know, the guys in that range, they're just really, really solid players. The JD Martinez is, you know, lots of good pitchers, you know, Brian Reynolds, Cody Bellinger, Christian Yelich. And so I never really landed on Chris Bryant. And I looked at my teams like, okay, third base and outfield. What if he signs with Coors? This would be in Colorado. This would be fantastic. So hit on it. We updated the projections, and where it stands now, it's probably going to hit second in the lineup. He comes in at, based on my auction values, which are kind of a little different just for my specific, for my Roto Lab, $17, tied for fourth behind the big three, Jose Ramirez, Devers, and Machado, and basically tied with Austin Riley and Alex Bregman. And we've got him for 7 stolen bases. He had 10 last year. He hasn't really stolen much the year before. And only 28 homers. Granted, you know, a couple of people are like, oh, well, why wouldn't he hit easily 30 plus in Coors? Yep, I agree with you. Probably right. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's where we're at now. Where he goes from here, like from his 99 ADP, I'm going to say 65, 80. There's still a lot of other good players that people are going to want to jump. So there'll be a little bit of a hype now, and it might die down in a week or two. Maybe. I'm not sure.
Hopefully it dies down by the time we arrive in the desert next week. But that remains to be seen. How about speaking of Rob Silver, our good friend, we'll get to see him next week in Las Vegas, and hopefully we'll have some Bloody Marys. His team, the Toronto Blue Jays, bringing in Matt Chapman today. I posted I'm patting myself on the back as well with the Obama giving Obama a medal, because Rob was tweeted out 5 or 6 days ago about, you know, who are the Blue Jays going to add as a bat in free agency? And I said they should trade for Matt Chapman. So patting myself on the back, here we are giving ourselves awards tonight, Vlad. Matt Chapman, what do you think about that? Where does he go looking at the current third base market that we were just talking about with Chris Bryant? According to ADP, as of over the last 2 weeks, he was the 17th third baseman on average going off the board with an ADP of 195. So 12th round on average, 12th, 13th round. With the men, you can see him going to the 11th there. How high up is he going to get pushed up? Does he go to the key Brian Hayes, Anthony Rendon range, DJ LeMahieu, or do you think a little bit lower than that? Because he's going to get some steam, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So both in the case of him and then Chris Bryant, it's that, I forgot the cartoon, but it's, you know, where like the eyes pop out of the head and they like drop to the ground. Maybe it's like the Roadrunner. I don't know. I forget.
I'm thinking of The Mask when he sees Cameron Diaz.
Yes. Yes. This is what happens when a good player signs on a team like, you know, first of all, in Colorado, half your games in the great elevation of Coors, or a power hitter with an amazing lineup like the Blue Jays have. It's just something that you have to consider it. You can't have your biases and be like, oh, well, you hit 200 last year and I don't know. No, this is legitimate. This is a game changer. I've had Chapman off my board, essentially. I've had him, you know, 2-3 rounds past ADP in my VDP, and had wanted no part of him, and then kind of thinking, okay, he's going to get traded somewhere. Don't really know where. He's going to go somewhere, but you know, I'm not really ready to jump on him. So I don't really have many shares, but I love it, man. You know, because of his defense, he's going to play every day. He's locked in at third base. It affects Biggio a little bit. Biggio and Santiago Espinal will probably platoon at second base, I would assume. Maybe Biggio has a little bit of bounce back, but Chapman's locked in. Probably can hit a little higher in the lineup. He's, you know, obviously not going to hit where he hit back in the day with Oakland, you know, third, fourth. So fifth, sixth, maybe, but still fantastic RBI spot. 35 plus home runs are definitely in play. Maybe a little bit of a bounce back in average. And then remember, we talked about it when we did our corner infielders tiers a few weeks ago. Remember our little trivia game, Matt Chapman was a Statcast darling, one of the average exit velocity leaders of the 2018 to 2017 to 2020 range or something like that. So he's a stud, man. I'm back in.
How about this too? The Oakland Athletics home park ranks 25th in home run park factor, whereas the Toronto Blue Jays rank 6th. And then when you topple that in with the opponent's divisional park factors, you've got Yankee Stadium versus like the Seattle Mariners park, Texas Rangers. So it's all in all. I mean, it's just a perfect concoction, right? It's just it's an old fashioned made just damn perfect.
Yeah. I'm trying to think remember when Josh Donaldson came to Toronto, and this is before they put their humidor in, but Donaldson came to Toronto, and that's kind of what this feels like here. And so, yeah, that first year was 2015. That was he had his breakouts before. He had a couple of good seasons in Oakland, obviously. But in Toronto, man, his age 29 season in 2015, 41 homers, 123 RBI, 122 runs, and 297. So obviously, I mean, Chapman, that's not what Chapman's going to do. Chapman's never going to hit 297. But, you know, right now where I have him, he falls into the, you know, Moncada, Ryan McMahon, Ke'Bryan Hayes group. Yeah. So that's like 130, 170 ADP. So that's a few round jump for me.
And also, when you mentioned that team that Donaldson was on, we know that Chapman won't have that batting average like Donaldson had, but even though Donaldson was on that sick Toronto Blue Jays lineup that had Edwin Encarnacion and Jose Bautista, this lineup is way better. It's much more deeper. It's much more talented overall. I think that something last year, something special happened. That had already happened, but I mean, dude, an AL East title could be on the horizon.
Oh yeah. That would be my bet for the AL East. This has been coming for some time. I believed that Toronto was going to make the playoffs last year. And then, you know, obviously I think Brad had a hand in that, in them missing out there at the end. But yeah, it also reminds me that how silly we can all be sometimes as a, and you know, it's obviously not to anyone personal, but like the fact that we were so bored there during the lockout there for a bit that we're having discussions about, is Vladimir Guerrero really a true first rounder and you're not getting steals and blah, blah, blah. And at the end of the year, and granted, there's no Dunedin, there's no, you know, the Buffalo Park, you're still talking about a guy. And again, I'm trailing here. I know he's not a free agent signing, but like, why would we at all be shocked that if Vladimir Guerrero wasn't a top three overall fantasy player this year, especially with Tatis out for a few months and Acuna kind of behind schedule, like seriously here, we're talking about a guy that last year was his breakout, but there's even possibly more in there. Bo Bichette, absolutely amazing. You've got two first rounders there. We saw what Simeon did, return first round value last year as like a, you know, 120 overall guy. So, I mean, just get as many pieces of this offense as you can.
Yeah. He could win the MVP. We saw that last year. He finished second just behind Ohtani, and Ohtani had a majestic season. That was historical. That was a unicorn season. And we can see Vlad follow that up with even some more juice. So all aboard.
Yeah. Next up on our list, another free agent signing. This one for the Phillies. It's Kyle Schwarber, big bomb Schwarber. 4 years, just a touch under $20 million a season. And yeah, sorry, Rhys Hoskins. He may not be hitting second because Schwarber knows how to take a walk. But kind of like this one. And yeah, this is a big bomber. This is a really kind of solidifies this lineup a little bit more because there were some concerns, specifically in the outfield when you were looking at a time maybe like a week and a half ago. Granted, they still haven't fixed their outfield, but you were looking at like Adam Haseley, Mickey Moniak, and Matt Vierling. Outside of Harper, of course, that was kind of the outfields you're looking at. You know, they signed Odubel Herrera, but you've added Kyle Schwarber into the mix. You've got Segura likely leading off. You got Harper, you got Real Muto possibly bounce back, and Rhys Hoskins, maybe Alec Baum, getting into his pre prospect sort of post hype, you know, possibilities there. So this is a pretty nice lineup in a good division for them.
Yeah, I like him. This will be the best park factor that he's had for a home park factor. So he's played now on the Cubs, Nationals, and Red Sox out of those three parks. Oddly, you would probably think, you know, just being a random spectator, the Red Sox would have the best home run park factor out of those teams. But it was actually the Nationals. They rank 11% above average. But the Phillies are slightly above that at 15%. They give him a $79 million deal. Slots him at the second two hole, which I agree with you. I think that's where he goes with that high walk rate. And now you're slotting him right in front of Bryce Harper, JT Realmuto, and Rhys Hoskins. I think Rhys Hoskins' RBIs go up while the runs go down, but this is a true upgrade for Schwarber. We saw last year, even though he was hurt with that massive hamstring injury and COVID-19 caused him to miss 50 plus games, he had a career year. I won't ramble on all the data, but it was a career best in batting average, ISO, WRC plus, XWOBA, which is expected WOBA, and barrel rate and hard hit rate. So hopefully his market doesn't go up too much. Maybe people, I know that some people are shy about him and then some people are really into him. So it's going to be interesting to see where he goes, right? I think he does get pushed up because he is the new signing. I think that's going to be a continuous trend we do see. So going below right now, Ryan Mountcastle, Miles Straw, Mitch Haniger, he's going to surpass them. He's certainly going to surpass Jesse Winker, who's going to descend in ADP. I like him.
So interesting enough, in this final draft champions that I'm in, 50-round draft, Kyle Schwarber went 108 overall. So that's one of the higher picks I've seen. And obviously it makes sense because he was just signed by Philadelphia. But Kyle Schwarber, 108 overall. Ironically, I got Jesse Winker at 131, and I've had him kind of slated in, you know, 90s, 100s. He's dropped a little bit, but yeah, at that point in the draft, both Jesse Winker and Jared Kelenic were available to me. I really didn't know what to do at that point. I was like, let's go with kind of the at least who I feel is a little bit more of a safer asset in Winker.
That is a huge, huge highlight though, Vlad, as how massive ADP just switched. Jesse Winker was, over the last 2 weeks, the 29th outfielder on average going off the board. Kyle Schwarber slightly after that at 34, but the ADP difference was 18 or 12 picks. It was almost around, right? Mm-hmm. They were going almost around, and now they're being flip-flopped there. Yep. And Winker's actually going maybe even around later than that. So you're going to continue to see that. Like Chris Bryant's going to flip-flop with somebody else. And guys are going to just rise like crazy when they find these landing spots. And ironically, these landing spots are mostly, for the most part, when we're talking about a lot of these guys, they're optimal spots. These are spots that we're liking. So it's just all boding well for us. I guess, you know, we were
just
being, yeah, exactly.
Nelson Cruz signs a one-year deal with the Nationals, $15 million. Already lots of videos of him hanging out with his new buddy, the man who he will protect in the lineup, baseball's arguably best player, Juan Soto. So Juan Soto and Nelly Cruz should be hitting back to back. Cruz providing Juan Soto that protection is such a genius signing, right? Because so this happened on Tuesday, and the conversation around that time was, okay, he's going to the Padres or the Dodgers or the Giants. Like, it seemed like that was what was happening. So the Nationals was essentially a curveball, but it just feels amazing. So it's an absolute perfect landing spot for him. 41 years old, and obviously he's still got it. Can easily hit 30 plus home runs. Decent ballpark for him. Obviously a great situation with Juan Soto always on base for him. So the question is to you: you've got Franmil Reyes, who's had some insane helium that's just been kind of random, but he's been, I mean, I can't even get him at 120, 130 anymore. So that's like 10th round of a 12 teamer. Now he's going around 100, 105. People love that pop. They love Franmil. Cruz has been going 190, 200. So there has to be a little bit of a difference. Like, is Franmil Reyes, like, I like Franmil Reyes. I actually expect him, if he plays a full season, to potentially hit 40 home runs. But like, is he really worth like 5 more rounds than Nelson Cruz, right? Doesn't Nelson need to kind of move up a little bit? And the question is, to where, and where would you take him?
Well, okay. So first of all, he is going to move up. That's the first part of this. And then we have to dismiss the current ADP of what you're talking about, because now we have the landing spot. Now we know where he's going to play. It's actually a good park factor. I mentioned earlier that where the Nationals home park is, it's 11% above average. It's a solid home run park factor. And then he's going to be hitting behind Juan Soto. That's absolutely sexy. And if you're not a fan of any team outside of the Nationals in the AL East, or I'm sorry, the NL East, you're going to be rooting for that team or that duo, because it's going to be a lot of fun and they're going to provide a lot of electricity. And I'm excited to see what they're going to do. Unfortunately, I think that they might end up trading him come the trade deadline, just because of what they have brewing there. But hopefully it's to another good landing spot and we'll keep that trend going. But your last question about where he goes and versus Franmil Reyes, now knowing what I know, I would go Nelson Cruz over Franmil Reyes. So then the question goes, where do I start to slide him in overall, just looking at hitters in general? And it has to be, you have to push him up. I'm sorry, I'm just keep scrolling up and up and up. I would grab him and Kyle Schwarber and both push them up well above like Jesse Winker area and start to get into that Cody Bellinger, JD Martinez, Brian Reynolds area for Nelson Cruz, in my opinion. I just think that's where he could end up going.
Yeah. So right now, and obviously we can share little bits and pieces from our projections. Obviously they're all behind the paywall, but we can, dabble a little bit here and give you a little snippets, but we have 31 homers, 92 RBI for Nelly Cruz, which, he hit 32 home runs in basically just 500 plate appearances or at bats actually, last season. And, he's consistently mashing them. I mean, like, is, first of all, the question is, can he stay healthy for a season, and is even 100 RBI possible? I mean, I guess, right? If he's healthy.
Well, yeah. And where he hits in that lineup and the person behind him would be Josh Bell. Plus Cesar Hernandez is a good OBP guy as well. And Juan Soto's the goat at it. So it really is a good recipe for success for him there. I truly do believe that. And then on top of that, the end of the season for him last year was a bit disappointing, and he's never really bode well in Tampa where he got traded to. So kind of dismissing, the X amount of plate appearances he had there could be something that kind of put a little bit of a ding in his seasonal numbers for 2021.
Next guy, because he was in a similar situation where it was looking like he was going to sign with a West Coast team, and that's Seiya Suzuki, the Japanese phenom, who signed with the Chicago Cubs. So if I'm not mistaken, you are moving in basically into, the suburb of Chicago, essentially when Seiya Suzuki starts his major league career, right?
Escrow is supposed to close on April 7th in Northbrook, Illinois, which is 21 miles north of Wrigley Field in the suburbs of Chicago. And I will certainly be there very, very soon to watch them. And then on my birthday, the Dodgers are going to be visiting the White Sox. So I'll definitely be at a lot of games, and I'm excited that Suzuki got signed there, and I'm excited at some other things that the Cubs are. I like that they're not, again, kind of just putting their hands underneath their ass. I know that they did some fire sell, last year, but you and I both agreed when we were talking about our free agent predictions that it was the right move to make in their current situation with those contracts. And we know the market and the financial ability and stability that they have there in Chicago on the north side. So good for them for ponying up and beating some of these other teams, because there were a lot of other big market teams in on him, and they got him. And mm-hmm. I'm excited and happy for them. I hope nothing but the best for him.
There are only two players that we're expecting in their opening day lineup who were in their opening day lineup last year. We're talking about the Cubs here. That's Wilson Contreras and Ian Happ. Those two, at least how Roster Resource dices it up for us, is they're going to be hitting third and fourth in the lineup. Obviously, we don't know exactly how things are going to shake out. They've got, say, a Suzuki slated to hit fifth. And obviously, I think we've talked about it before. I think it's a little bit different than Haesung Kim, who a Korean prospect, obviously a different league. But Haesung Kim mashed in the KBO. I watched those games. I watched this guy. I was like, man, I would love to see him in the big leagues. And the adjustment was really rough for him. He struggled tremendously. Say Suzuki is a bit different. There's a bit of a generational talent to him from the league that he comes from. He really absolutely stood out, but we still don't exactly know what we're going to get out of him. I think you'll even see projections around across the board, but everything from stolen bases, like he can swipe 5, maybe he can swipe 15, like home runs between 15, 25. I mean, do we really know?
I think the projection systems are all broken right now. Because volume and that contract and where he's playing, there's no competition. He's the show in town. The volume, right? We're looking mm-hmm. at, and I'm not, maybe they're just not updated, right? But ATC, 287 plate appearances, the bat, 287, the bat X, 287. He's playing every damn day. So it's hard to look at those. I mean, sure, if you want to multiply them, then maybe you get your projection there, but I just see him playing every single day with the contract they give him in the state of their, you know, capacity of depth. And it's just inevitable he's going to get all the burn in the world.
So as you said that, it's official, buddy. We got him.
No.
6 years, $162
million. Yes.
Jeff Passan tweet, in nearly 20 years covering baseball, not sure I've ever seen a better lineup than the one the Dodgers will use this season. In some order, it's going to be Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, Trey Turner, Will Smith, Max Muncy, Cody Bellinger, Justin Turner, Chris Taylor, and AJ Pollock.
Upgrade them all.
Beautiful.
Bump them all.
Yeah. All right. Freddie's on the team. Time to do.
Not to mention the home run park factor in LA versus Los Angeles, Los Angeles versus Atlanta. It's an upgrade there too.
Interesting. Okay. It's gone. It's on. So we'll see.
Wow.
We're gonna get a lot of hate mail and
New Jersey like that, season, baby. I get a New Jersey every year. So there it is.
love it. Man. So all right. So kind of I guess wrapping up Saya Suzuki. Our projections are, I think we were one of the first ones to project them because he didn't even have a FanGraphs page up until today. We've kind of had him where we do, which fits him into a little bit higher than his ADP. So his ADP has really traveled everywhere from 250 overall up to 200. Recently, it's been in the 180 ranges. We have him 150, 160-ish. And now you're going to see him going even higher than 150. At least that's what I think. And then just, for those that are like, you know, kind of like, oh, these numbers you're throwing around, these overall ADP numbers, a good way to look at it is when I say 150 overall, that's basically the cutoff point of the 10th round. That's the end of the 10th round of a 15 teamer. So you look at, you know, that 10th round, Suzuki's now going to kind of cross that border, so to speak, over onto the top 150.
May I give you a 1v1 and ask you who you would take?
Absolutely.
Suzuki. How about Suzuki versus Akil Baddoo?
Oh, it's not close for me. It's not even close for me because I'm not touching Baddoo.
Okay, cool. And he's got why I ask is because he has an ADP over the last 2 weeks of 153.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And I think we talked about it before. I think, we don't have to get into Baddoo, but it's just, like you said, Suzuki's going to be this show in town. Baddoo may or may not lead off. He may or may not platoon. So I don't know, a lot of things there going on.
Okay. The market's going to correct itself. It's going to. Uh-huh.
A few guys in kind of smaller deals here that we can kind of discuss all together. You've got Eddie Rosario returning to the Braves after his NLCS heroics last season. 2 years, $9 million per season. You've got Anthony Rizzo to the Yankees. 2 years, $16 million per season. He can opt out after 2023. Jock Peterson, I know you got something to say about this. A one-year deal, $6 million with the rival San Francisco Giants. And then older gentleman now, at least in baseball terms, Andrew McCutchen, one-year deal with the Brewers for $8.5 million.
Let's start with you want to go with Rizzo first?
Yeah, just like kind of because, throw it all
well,
out there.
Well, yeah, because the other three are outfielders, so we can kind of clump them in and then go cool. with Rizzo. It's an obvious upgrade, right? Now we're going to get 81 full games at Yankee Stadium. Any left-handed bat hitting there, that's going to be a pure upgrade, especially when comparing him to Wrigley Field. And then on top of that, the lineup context, you got all those big boppers there. Putting the vaccination stuff aside, the lineup context is just, it's huge for him there. He seemed comfortable there. He's going to fit in with the limelight. So big upgrade for him. Where does he go, right? Does he rise? Yes, I would say.
Rizzo?
How far, though? Yes. So Anthony Rizzo, we have him currently over the last 2 weeks in ADP going up below Alex Kirilloff, Max Muncy, Ty France, Joey Votto, Tyler Stevenson. Let's dismiss him, though, that he doesn't count. Sorry. Stopping there. So Joey Votto, Ty France, Max Muncy, Alex Kirilloff. He surpasses all of them, right? In ADP. Yeah. Just going into, like, live events. Not our rankings or anything like that. Just, like, you know, the market itself.
Yeah, I mean, Rizzo has been a pretty stable asset in that range. I mean, I was in an OC where he went like 230 overall, which is just mind-blowing to me. There was just a point where, man, I'm all loaded up on corners. I don't need another one, but man, it's really hard to see Rizzo keep falling. He's personally somebody that I have not been drafting the last few seasons. A little bit of a batting average dip. The fact that plate discipline, I believe, has waned a little bit and just doesn't give you that kind of 30 plus home run power anymore. And, obviously with the Yankees last year, he was, just average, right? Just, nothing special. And so for me, I think he moves a little bit, but then it's a hard discussion because, versus somebody like Kirilloff, for example, who is pretty studly prospect, obviously a team context isn't as good. And then it's just a matter of, do you want to kind of draft a guy that you kind of know what you're going to get out of, what the general range of numbers are going to be in a 5x5 roto stat line. Or do you want to take a risk with Kirilloff, who can be sort of way above or way below what sort of median projections are?
I've got a 4-honey, and I have Kirilloff and Rizzo in that 4-honey. So hopefully they both do good.
Balling.
Outfielders. Okay, so out of the three, everybody obviously likes Eddie Rosario out of between Jock Peterson, Andrew McCutchen, and Eddie Rosario. Going back to the Braves, that's the match made in heaven, right? We haven't seen him ball so hard since he's, got to Atlanta. So simple math tells me I think he's comfortable there. The fans are going to absolutely love him. He was the NLCS MVP for them. It's pretty easy to say that he's got a defined role there and all aboard. With Jock Peterson, though, I think it's going to be a great match in real life. I think that the platoon situation will be fantastic. They'll mix and match him with Austin Slater, Darren Ruff, et cetera. And when he gets his opportunities, I think he's going to fulfill them and he will provide good value, but it could be a headache at times when it does come to a player that gets his splits. But I don't think that the draft cost will cost too much, hopefully. So, he could be a headache, but I think that if you can get the decent draft value, maybe the platoon thing could be all right. And then with Andrew McCutchen, there's a great landing spot, and it hurts Tyrone Taylor, though. And I know a lot of people have been talking about that on Twitter, about their DC shares and how much, those are just being lit on fire right now. I will say, though, with Andrew McCutchen, we've seen injuries and age, and we've also seen that with Christian Yelich as well. So, temper your expectations of or lack thereof when kind of just throwing Tyrone Taylor to the side, because he is young, he is talented, he is good. So don't get your hopes up just yet, I would say, for that.
Yeah, I was a little bummed that we had to tick down the Lorenzo Cain projection a little bit. And he's somebody.
Oh, him as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just natural, kind of the way things shape up there. Of course, Kane is I believe, even though he's like 35, 36, is still, I think, decent defensively when he's healthy, can actually still run. I think sprint speed's okay, or above average, of course, still. And yeah, they'll still probably have him out there in the outfield. McCutcheon's probably going to a DH, at least that's what I read, the plan for him. Right? Did I read that right? Or am I now confusing my players? I could have sworn...
No, that sounds right.
Yeah. So, So, yeah, solid McCutcheon as far as where he's been going. You can probably move him up a couple rounds because at that point you're talking about like, you know, 260 overall as opposed to maybe like 220, 230. I mean, it's just splitting hairs. It's just, at that point, it's just sort of a matter of favorites and what categories you want. McCutcheon's been a little bit of a batting average drag, but with strong power. So if he fits your team at that point, then probably worth the stab. Jock Peterson is interesting. You and I have talked about him a lot over the years. I had not been a Jock Peterson fan back in LA just because I kind of knew him well as being a little bit somebody not, even though he always seemed to mash homers, in plate appearances that I saw with him a lot of times with the Dodgers, he just kind of wasn't putting his full effort in. I had a friend that dated him actually a few years ago, like met on like Tinder or something like that. And they ended up dating for a while and just kind of, you know, just really getting into the LA lifestyle. And I kind of hate that for our players when they get affected that way. And this is kind of a new Jock, obviously, after, you know, Atlanta winning and him kind of, getting a little snarkier, not snarkier on Twitter, but just he's just more fun. Just kind of seems like a different guy, a little bit more relaxed. This will fit in nicely for him. And like our boy, Nick Schlein, who Electric Snuff on Twitter, who wrote in our FTN 5-Tool draft guide, said, it is a platoon made of heaven, essentially from heaven. Jock Peterson and Darren Ruff, lefty-righty splits. And San Francisco is the beautiful place for that, right? You got Wilmer Flores with La Stella. You got Lamont Wade lefty with Austin Slater righty. It's just like the perfect mix and match lineup, San Francisco, and Jock fits in perfectly for that.
They'll be throwing out their playoff lineup from opening day, and I love it. I think it's effective, and I think that they will continue to have success doing so. One thing I'll say about the whole Tinder thing, Jock has a daughter named Poppy. He is married now, happily married, and it seems like he has settled down and matured quite a bit, even though he's matured so much the dude's wearing pearl necklaces now. So, I think that it's and he's going home. That's where his hometown. He's not from Southern California, if you're not aware. He's actually born near the Bay Area. So, he'll be near his family, and it's good for him. I'm happy.
And in about 2 weeks after the season begins, he turns 30. So make sure you guys wish Jock Peterson a happy 30th on April 21st.
Pop bottles.
So that's it for the hitter free agent signings for the most part. A couple on the trade side. We already discussed Matt Olson, Matt Chapman. Those Oakland A's are no longer. Real quick on Mitch Garver, any change for you as far as the overall looking at the group of catchers there? Does he move up into the Kiber Ruiz range? Does he move past Tyler Stevenson? Does this change anything for you?
No, I like him. I think I would keep him put though, actually. Maybe put him ahead of Tyler Stevenson. I think that lineup context is pretty poo. Mm-hmm. And he certainly does have much more power than him. So I would slide Tyler Stevenson. Just when looking at ADP, not like rankings or anything, in regards to ADP, I would bump Stevenson down below Ruiz and Garver, and bump, you know, Garver above Stevenson. But for the most part, no, I don't think he'll move too much. I think it's okay. And they made some additions there. So the depth and context doesn't bother me too much.
Yeah, it really is kind of a bummer for some of us that were actually Heim homies, Jonah Heim. We were fans grabbing him in late rounds as like our third catcher. And even he started moving up into basically into like the 25-30 round range. And all of a sudden that unfortunately doesn't look all that good now with Mitch Garver there. Obviously, both are decent pitch framers. Garver will probably play a lot of catcher. And then remember a few years ago in Minnesota, he spent a lot of time leading off against lefties. He absolutely mashes them. And so you might even see something like that if, you know, with Marcus, depending on if they sign anyone, there could be times when Mitch Garver leads off with Simeon hitting second in that lineup when a lefty's on the mound.
I'm okay with him. He's definitely a decent C1.
Two more trades, obviously, kind of saving the best for last when it comes to hitters. Two monster trades, actually. The first one is Josh Donaldson, a newly clean-shaven one, going to the New York Yankees, along with Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, who was traded twice in a 24-hour period, and Ben Rortvedt, who apparently is as yoked as Yandy Diaz. I don't know if you've seen this guy. He's a beast. And I mean, I only know, you know, I mean, I try to know everyone, and I'm not like a super uber prospects guy. I don't know, like, you know, single A players, but Ben Rortvedt, I remember because I do play a lot of DFS, and there was a certain time when he came up and I was looking at his minor league numbers, like, okay, he's called up, he's in the lineup, you know, he's a lefty bat hitting against a righty, and that's kind of the only reason I know him. But the interesting part was when that trade was made, and that trade was made for Gio Urshela, essentially Gio Urshela and Gary Sanchez both now going to Minnesota. Some people were like, oh, are they going to get Wilson Contreras now? Are they going to get Sean Murphy? Who are they going to trade for? And there were straight up people that are like, no, man, it's Ben Rortvedt. He's the guy. And then you've got the Kyle Hishioka camp. Like, no, it's Kyle Hishioka. So it's just interesting. Like, people have just such diverse opinions, but there's definitely a clan of folks out there who think, you know, big old Ben Rortvedt is actually going to be like the guy in New York.
I just pulled up Google Images, and him and Tyler O'Neill, they have a bench pressing competition. Holy shit, dude. So, his last name might be a little confusing, but so you could just call him Bro, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I called him Bro. I'm sorry. I called him Bro-y Diaz.
Okay, there you go. I don't know about fantasy impacts or value, and I don't know too much about him. So I'm going to dismiss him for now and take the easy out there. But I think that there's some upgrades to be had for playing time for some of these guys, right? Like Gio Urshela. I think that he's going to get a slight upgrade if you've been drafting him in DCs. What do you want to do about Josh Donaldson? Do you want to analyze him with the uncertainties of vaccination or without that? How do you want to go about dissecting that? So there's, you know, one path or the other.
Yeah, I'm going with the easier path. I'm going with that they figure it out by then.
Okay.
Because I'm already hearing whispers of that. Same thing like with the lockout. Like even though at the end it was, you know, doom and gloom, I was like, they're gonna figure it out, and that's what I'm gonna just assume it with. Yeah, I mean, for me, more the concern is his age, the fact that he's got the lower leg issues for so long. Yet somehow he's been playing, right? I mean, he's had a few DL stints here and there. But, you know, if you're looking at just, you know, Donaldson over the last few seasons, he missed half of 2020, but half of 2020 was just 30 games. Last season, he played 135, the year before 155. So a lot of this concern in draft and holds about, like, you know, oh, Donaldson, is he going to be able to hold up for a year? And he's, you know, turning 37 this year. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he can hold up. Maybe things will work out really well for him in New York. Obviously, he's a big, you know, monster power bat. What was it last year? His barrel rate was an insane 17.4%. I don't know. That might be even the best in baseball or top five last year, but he was just absolutely mashing 50%+ hard hit rate. It's a really good fit for him. And so even in these drafts that I've seen in the last couple of days, he's kind of flown under the radar in that respect. Like a Josh Donaldson in that Yankees lineup, who literally could hit 40 home runs if he plays 145 plus games, is still going like around 200 overall. ADP has been around 220, 230 the last few months. I don't know how much you can only move up so many guys without other players moving down. There's got to be some give and take.
Yeah, so he's right below Matt Chapman over the last 2 weeks, and we both agree that he is going to move up. So Matt Chapman's ADP was 195. Josh Donaldson is 200. Eugenio Suarez is 181 right above them. He's going to be one of the fallers. So down he goes. He's going to he's crashing, burning. Okay, so there's one guy. Then you've got Justin Turner, who has similar injury concerns to Josh Donaldson, who has higher upside, right? I would go Josh Donaldson personally, actually.
Oh, upside? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I think maybe he then surpasses Justin Turner. And then if you're somebody that likes to dig into, you know, replacement value home road splits for Colorado Rockies players, you can certainly talk yourself into drafting him ahead of Ryan McMahon. Then there's people that, you know, are on one side of the fence and they're a believer on Yon Moncada, or the others are just certainly out. And I think Luis Urias is just totally mispriced. So I think that there is a path to where he does climb like five plus spots in the third base ADP as we're looking over the last 2 weeks.
Hold on a second. So I haven't actually clicked on to see what the line, you know, because you got to visualize it sometimes and then you see things. I hadn't actually, since this trade, I hadn't actually clicked on Roster Resources, Yankees player page. And now, especially with Rizzo on there. So check shit out.
It's disgusting.
Anthony, yeah, so bad. I'm cursing on a live podcast. Anthony Rizzo, Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, Josh Donaldson, Joey Gallo, your front five. Good freaking Lord.
Yeah. And two of them, oh man. Yeah. Two of them are just, yeah. I love it. I love it. I love all of it. And then, are they planning on starting Bro?
Bro, Retford? No. So the way that I see it, I think they're going to let him compete. Ben Rortvedt, the new catcher, from Minnesota. And
Kyle Higashioka.
Those two guys are going to be competing in camp. And it most likely is just going to come down to the lineup because they perfectly complement each other as far as Rortvedt being a lefty bat, Higashioka a righty bat. So that'll work out well. I didn't even remember or realize that Higashioka is so old. He's turning, in baseball terms, he's turning 32. Ben Rortvedt is 24. So I don't know. Just throwing those numbers out there is just for the heck of it. But yeah, I mean, that's how I see it. Those two are going to split and they'll be, you know, basically hitting ninth.
Roster Resource has DJ LeMahieu on the bench.
I didn't think about that. I knew something was missing there. That doesn't make any sense.
They wouldn't move Glaber to short and put DJ at second or something like
that.
They have
Isaac. Yeah, they have Kiner Falefa.
Yeah. DJ LeMahieu's playing over him.
They're not done there. I could see them. I haven't seen or heard any rumor. I can see them flipping Glaber Torres.
LeMahieu's not coming off the bench.
No. DJ
LeMahieu. Or maybe they trade him. I don't know, but I don't think he's coming off the bench.
Yeah, I don't know how this lineup works. That's a good point. Very, very good call. I'm interesting you didn't know that you said that. Luke Voit, by the way, he's got to go, right? He's got to be traded at some point.
Yeah, the FTN over at FTNFantasy.com, we will have tomorrow's our weekly or bi-weekly roundup of off-season transactions over the MLB season. And I think we were talking about, should we list him as a downgrade because of the addition of Anthony Rizzo? And you just mentioned the Yankees lineup. If DJ LeMahieu's on the bench, Luke Voit's on the bench, well, that's an obvious downgrade, right? So there's been some rumors and rumblings that he could potentially be getting traded. If he gets traded, he's not going to be a downgrade. He's likely going to get traded because he's going to find himself hopefully in a full-time position. But his current state is a downgrade. So we're kind of in a conundrum when deciding what to do with his stock moving forward. But as of now, and as we're talking, it's certainly a downgrade.
Yeah. That'll be interesting. What about the big monster trade? The other one, Jesse Winker, Eugenio Suarez, you alluded to it, for going to the Mariners and that fire sale. The Reds basically getting Jake Fraley, kind of a leftover outfielder piece, who actually I'm a little intrigued with. Justin Dunn, who I think is going to get blasted there. I don't think his stuff is going to fit in really well there in Cincinnati. And then a prospect on the lower end, Brandon Williamson. Everybody's downgrading Winker and Suarez. I think you already alluded to that with Suarez. Same thing with Winker. Are you less interested because of the park dynamic shift?
So let me start with Justin Dunn real quick. I know that most people, if you're going into a 30 round like main event draft or a RotoWire online championship, which is a 12 team draft, 30 rounds, Justin Dunn's not going to be on your draft board as of today. But if you have drafted him in a draft champions, I do want to know, when he does get these road starts against the Pirates and some of these other NL Central teams, I think that there could be some outings that he could be still formidable in streaming options due to having a spot in the rotation. And there are going to be some good parks and good matchups along the way. And then looking at Eugenio Suarez, I don't want anything to do with him. I really didn't want to have anything to do with him last year, even when people were kind of enamored with him. Didn't want anything to do with him in this offseason, even though he was projected to be the third baseman for the Reds. And now, you would have to, like I'm taking all the way down to like Alec Bohm ahead of him. So, and he's an ADP of 289. Let's see, Eugenio Suarez is 181. That's 100 pick difference in ADP. Give me Bohm straight up over Eugenio Suarez. I don't think the park factor bodes well for him. I don't think the team's depth and them wanting to compete bodes well for him. I think that there's some competition. I just don't like him as a hitter. I think he has a ton of flaws, and this park is certainly not going to help patch up those flaws. So, yeah, let's just call it the Casey Cha method for Eugenio Suarez for me this year. Peace out on him. And then with Jesse Winker, I know that the park factor is definitely a downgrade when looking at the home run park factor. It's just not good at all. So he's currently the 29th outfielder on average. I think we're going to have to give him a downgrade. The question to me is, okay, how much better is he now, like, versus an Alex Verdugo? That's kind of where I want to, like, get into.
Yeah.
Dylan Carlson, Alex Verdugo.
Well, so, yeah, I mean that can be kind of almost a mini pod on itself, because those are all because those are all three interesting names, because Verdugo's somebody that
similar profiles with contact
Winker, you're just gonna get some more power out of him. He's a good leadoff man. I mean, he would have literally been a top 60 overall pick if he had finished the full season, because he would have had the 30 home runs, 100 plus runs in RBI. Had he finished out the way that his season was going prior to his injury. But yeah, I mean, it's a loaded lineup. I really like what they're doing there. They'll be a fun team to watch. They'll be a fun team to stack in DFS, especially when some of those Rangers pitchers are coming up. So I'm still in on Winker. I believe I'm going to be able to now get a little bit of a discount with Eugenio Suarez. Obviously, yeah, he's not in Cincinnati, so I'm less interested because of the power output. And he fits a certain type of mold for your team where you're short on power. You can afford to take a batting average drain. And I would consider that at like 230, 250 overall, but not where he's going. If he's going like 180, I'm not interested. There are other guys without his major batting average downside that I think I would take instead.
I'm sorry, just one last thing on Winker real quick too. So with the ADP of 109, what we know today now, give me Eddie Rosario straight up 178.
Winker, Rosario over Winker.
Eddie Rosario over Jesse Winker, yeah.
Yeah, so that basically just says you're just not.
I did draft Jesse Winker in the eighth round in Barth, though, thinking that he was going to play with Cincinnati.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's still so what improves a little bit there is you know, team context. And if everything really kind of hits for a lot of those players, if Jared Kellen starts to break out, you know, Mitch Haniger continues to stay healthy and produce like he did last year, there's some good things there. But now I think his price might be a little sort of better off, where, you know, like I said earlier in the podcast, got him at 130 as opposed to like 100. That's a little bit more of a feasible cost for me.
And you know what, Vlad, you might be right. The dip could be worth it, right? We don't know what it's going to be, and it could be too extreme in some rooms. We are going to see a max. That's going to be egregious in some room. There will be John Posma that gets him in like the fucking 15th or 16th round in a main event. It will happen. And then that juice will be worth the squeeze, right?
I was going to say that. That's funny. Just the last little piece here is Jake Fraley. You know what? I was talking with Scott Jenstad the other day, who came out to lunch for my birthday, and him and Jeff Erickson. Scott was like, "Dude, sorry to burst your bubble. Fraley sucks. He's just a bad hitter." And I'm like, you know, damn. But end of the basically in the end game of 15 teamers, even to some extent 12 teamers, there's something here to the profile. I understand 85. Average mile per hour, average exit velocity, not necessarily kind of a big home run hitter, but in the team context of Cincinnati, where, you know, even though he's a lefty, he might do a little platooning. I mean, or they might just let him roll and just let him play most of the time. And the dude had a 17.4% walk rate. Granted, a small sample, it was only half a season, and there was, you know, some games where he was pulled out of games early, but 265 plate appearances, the 17.5% walk rate. And actually his, I don't know, maybe that's not exactly what we're expecting from him, but the guy runs. So he does have a history of stealing bases, 24 in like 90 minor league games back in 2019. He had 33 swipes back in 2016, 10 swipes in just 78 games last year. So yeah, I mean, there's a potential for 10 homers, 15 RBI, and more so because he's a lefty. He's the type of guy in NFBC where you would use him when you see the schedule advantageous. Like he's at home and they're facing three righties on the weekend. Then you pop him into your lineup, especially if you need some steals. So a lot of that is, you know, that's kind of where he comes into play.
I'm the worst Jake Fraley truther you will ever run into. This is the cheapest 2020 season that you could potentially get, albeit the batting average could be bad. You're going to get all the volume in the world. They don't really even have anybody to platoon him. He's still young. He has a lot of pedigree. I love this. I really do. And then on top of that, please tweet me if you have more shares than me. I only have 11 NFBC leagues done, but I've got him in four leagues, and that was when he was with Seattle still. So albeit it was way late. I mean, if you're able to get somebody that has some home run upside and stolen base upside, shoot or shoot, baby, take your shot. I'm all for it. If I can get him in the reserve round super late as my first or second backup outfielder, you know, depending on how I'm wanting to build that outfield depth, I'm going to have him, you know, loaded in my queue that late in the draft. I'm good with it.
Yeah. He's moving. So he's definitely moving up my draft board. It's so funny that we're going from like talking about Freddie Freeman and Matt Olson to like digging in on Jake Fraley. But hey, that's what we do here. I'm looking at my player exposure. I've got him only on 10% of teams, which is sad because he was kind of like a safe guy for me to sort of want to click on when he was going in like rounds 40-ish or something like that. And now, yeah, I mean, like kiss that goodbye. So if you want Jake Fraley, it's not going to be a top 30 pick.
I'm sorry. It was 15 teams, not 11. I'm a degenerate.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. This is what we do, man. It's what we love. Smaller signings real quick before we jump into the pitchers, and we'll do the pitchers a little bit faster here, but any one of fantasy relevance here, you've got Jose Iglesias and Coors likely starting shortstop, or at least most of the time. Nico Goodrum, kind of a utility man with some speed, obviously bad average. Now with Houston, probably back up a different position, second base, shortstop, if Jeremy Pena struggles, and in the outfield. You've got Josh Harrison, three positions of eligibility, probably, you know, play some second base, split some time with Leury Garcia there. Alex Dickerson for the Braves now, probably just like a platoon bat or use him for DFS. Danny Vogelbach, Matt Duffy with the Angels, Vogelbach with Pittsburgh. Anyone interested in it?
Honestly, no. Out of all of them, though, it might be Odubel Herrera just because of the outfield situation there. I think that there's still one shot up or one position up for grabs as long as they don't bring in Nick Castellanos, which they should. Do it, Philly. You have Bryce Harper. You ponied up for the franchise legacy player. Now you go out and you try and win. The depth there, though, would have me in on Odubel Herrera. These other guys, and Jose Iglesias, I guess, sure. If he's going to be the starting shortstop for the Colorado Rockies, I guess anybody like that's going to have to get some burn, right? If there's volume and you play half your games in Colorado, when he's at home, I guess he's okay, usable if you want that batting average and some runs potentially. Mm-hmm. What's his stolen base? What's his?
Who?
I don't know his last 3-year rolling average. Jose Iglesias.
Is he going to give you a couple? Yes, he does. He'll like 5 to 10.
Okay. Well, then there you go. So you use him at home. You get your average. You get your runs. You get maybe a bag or two. Other than that, though, I really don't want. This is all dog food.
Dog food. I like that. I will just mention that. And again, this is like really kind of deep, and a lot of us aren't doing like super deep drafts anymore, but just a name to keep out there for fab, especially for people that are thinking, man, steals are always so hard to come by. Timmy LoCastro for the Yankees. He'll probably just be like a pinch runner, but he's just somebody that just to keep in our radar, maybe more so for, if you're really desperate in steals, in need of stolen bases sometime in the middle of the season, and you're, you know, super awesome in power and just really need to catch up, and one of the outfielders gets hurt and he gets playing time, there's a possibility there. And then I will mention, even though he's awful, you do not want to touch him in fantasy, but it's a fantasy show. Robinson Chirinos signed with Baltimore. Okay. Perfect timing, because Adley Rutschman, probably going to miss the first few weeks. Obviously his start to his major league career is delayed for a little bit. And yeah, there's just really not much going on there. So Chirinos and his veteran presence will be a part of the team.
Would Robinson Chirinos be the Wires version of Mike Zunino this year?
I mean, there are a lot of different candidates that could potentially, you know.
He's because the Wire is shot in Baltimore and like neither are going to have good averages, but he's got the power. And if he gets his dose on the street on like the Wire, maybe he'll give you those home runs every now and then. Yeah, but he's a huge batting average liability. We know that, we always have, but that is a really good call, man. Deep shot flyer, there is still some home run potential there. The park factor could be a little bit thing, but he did have some power and he's going to have the playing time, so I like it.
So pitchers now, we're going to try to run through these pretty quick, and there's a lot less of them, of course, and of less relevance, but just real quick, going to bucket these guys together. Because they're at least, I don't want to say somewhat close to it in ADP. Actually, they're not at all. But you've got Carlos Rodon, the 2-year contract, $22 million per season with the Giants, joins that awesome rotation that's going to do their best to crush the Dodgers whenever they do face one another. Him, Clayton Kershaw back, 1 year, $17 million, I'm sure you're pretty happy about. Yusei Kikuchi joining another fantastic, fantastic rotation for the Blue Jays. Even though they let go of Robbie Ray, this rotation is deep. 3 years, $13 million per season. And then the last guy in the group I'll mention, he's way past there in ADP, past 300. Maybe he moves up just a little bit, but Zach Greinke goes back to where it all started, a 1 year, $13 million deal with the Royals. So you've got Carlos Rodon, Kershaw, Kikuchi, Greinke.
Very cool. Now's the time to sell your Zach Greinke rookie cards if you have them. I think the time is now. I actually like the landing spot for Greinke. I think he'll be comfortable there. I think the market, the media is something that he could look forward to. He's familiar with the place and with the organization, and I think it's a good spot. They have a good defense. They have an ascending offense. They have some upside and talent. I like it. I really do. I'm not saying that I'm going to be necessarily dying to get Zach Greinke, but at his current cost, if I'm needing some innings and I'm looking to, you know, grab some depth in the reserve rounds, I'm all for it. If you've got him in some DCs, you have to be happy you bought him at his all-time low. He could only go up from now because we do know where he's signing. He's not going to retire, etc. And it is a good landing spot overall. If we're nitpicking that, Yusei Kikuchi, I really wish the Dodgers would have landed him. I thought that would have been a perfect spot for him, especially with the relationships that they've had with Japanese pitchers in the past. But going to the Blue Jays, great spot. I mean, they have good defense, especially now with the adding Matt Chapman. But the unfortunate part is he is not Jose Berrios. He is not Kevin Gausman, and he is not Hyunjin Ryu when it comes to having a 40%+ ground ball rate. He does give up quite a bit of home runs. The division, the park factor, it makes it tough. It's a tough pill to swallow for me at the moment. And then knowing that he's going on this sexy team, is he going to rise? I think so, right? Because some people had the concerns of him possibly maybe going back to Japan because there was a lockout, right? Where was he going to play ball? So I think that had an impact on the market. So he's going to rise, but where does he rise? Is he going to get into like the Josiah Gray, Luis Patino range? If so, I'm taking the other two all day, every day. So I don't know where he goes, but for now I'm out on him just because of the park factor and the opponents that he'll face most of the time. Clayton Kershaw, I tweeted my heart was melting when it happened. And then I even got somebody that was tweeting, you know, one of those negative Nancy's kind of talking about how he shouldn't have gotten all that money. He didn't deserve it. He's hurt. He's a bum. He sucks in the playoffs. I basically told that person, if we could bleep this part out, you want to, but to shut the fuck up. I don't care if he throws a single inning. He's deserved all of it. And I'm glad that he's in the clubhouse. He's still there as a mentor. And like I said, my heart is still full. But with that being said, I will not have any exposure to Clayton Kershaw this year, just because I do have concerns with the injury that did not allow him to pitch in the postseason. And albeit that he's throwing the baseball right now in spring training, we now know that he's on the Dodgers versus the Rangers. He's going to ascend just a little bit in ADP. I don't know how high that is going to be, but if I was out on him during the uncertain market, and I, you know how I like to say, an uncertain market could provide some potential room for profit. I wasn't even in at that point, and I'm not in now. with Carlos Rodon, I was totally in on him at his old ADP, and then he broke the internet. And I'm not going to be able to pay that price when he's going to sneak into the max free Joe Musgrove, Logan Webb range, if I had to guess, right? I'm not sure if you agree with that. Jose Berrios, Lance Lynn in that range, Dylan Cease should jump up a little bit, but it's too rich for me now. But I will say, Rob Silver, please don't get mad. When Rodon was going in the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th round, I do have exposure to him. His price is just going to ascend to a part that I'm not comfortable with, just to sum that up.
Yeah. So on Greinke, the one thing that I'll remind people is that after pick 300, there are not many pitchers that are healthy that can get you 25, 30. No, he averaged 33 starts a season for like five consecutive seasons, you know, excluding that 2020 pandemic season. Who gets you who is such a good control pitcher, who will give you a good whip, good volume guy, minus the strikeouts, of course. Last season, 17%. Career worst, Zach Greinke, but the walk rate is insane. 5% last season was his highest in several years. The two previous years, it was basically under 4%. And now he's going back to Kansas City, going to be a little bit more comfortable. Zach Greinke is going to be mentoring these younger guys, maybe helping to get something out of them. You know, he's going to be a future pitching coach or manager. These Jackson Kowars, Daniel Lynch's, I'm a little bit more intrigued with some of those guys and keeping an eye out for them in free agent bidding during the season. But yeah, I would consider Greinke when I have a lot of strikeouts and I need just a nice volume arm late. I would absolutely take him, maybe have a nice little bounce back season.
Real quick, Vlad, should he now be going closer to like Kyle Hendrickson? I mean, isn't that the same profile?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I'm actually back in on, we may have talked about it last week, but I'm a little bit more back in on Kyle Hendricks. I want to be careful not to get too many.
You must have read the Juice WRLD Squeeze article.
I did. I don't want to have too many of those low strikeout guys. Like if I have, you know, already a Max Fried and I have a Adam Wainwright, I'm not even touching these guys. That means no Savali for me, no, you know, Cal Quantrill, any of these guys. But it's nice to have some solid, stable ratios, and especially in Fab Leagues, you can finesse, you can manage things through the season. So absolutely, I would consider him. It's just a matter of, you know, sort of my team build at that time.
I really hope you mentioned the mentoring. Carlos Hernandez, dude, absorb it all, man. Absorb it all. Yes. Take it all in, baby.
Yep. Kikuchi, I'm just, it doesn't really move the needle much for me. It's a worse ballpark for pitchers. Yeah, the defense is good and everything, but just, you know, he's a box of chocolates week to week. I just don't know what I'm going to get, if I'll be able to time that properly. And that's not something I want to personally deal with. Clayton Kershaw, he was taken. So for context, his ADP has been in the 160 to 180 range over the last couple of months, you know, sometimes higher, lower. He went 142, which is the middle of the 10th round in my latest draft champions, 15 round league. So yeah. So there always will be somebody that'll probably want him more. You know, we're not trying to be homers here. We're trying to make money. We're trying to have fun, but I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to take Clayton Kershaw on the 10th.
When you said that, all I saw was you being Mark Cuban and saying, "With that, I'm out."
With that, I'm out.
Yeah.
And then Carlos Rodon, like, I think both you and I said the same thing as far as like where we thought his price would end up after that. And it's possible we may have overshot it, just kind of looking at drafts lately. He's going just a touch lower, and it's closer to the, you know, the Cease, not a little lower than Cease, like the Trevor Rogers, Verlander, Darvish range, which is like 80 to 100 overall. That's like, you know, sixth round ish in 15 teamers. And it just depends. Each draft is going to be different. There's going to be somebody that's in on him, someone else that isn't because of injury concerns. So it's tough. In general, of course, it's a great bullpen, but a rotation, great place to pitch, but things have changed with the price. Like if you're going from 130 overall to, you know, 75, it's a whole different ballgame.
Can we cut the bullshit and give the people what they want?
The closers?
No. With Rodon. I know we've all been tweeting and beating around the bush, and we're going to see where he's going to go, and we're all guessing a little bit. Give the people what they want. How about I do some 1v1s and you just tell the people a yes or no quickly. Would you take Rodon versus this pitcher?
Okay.
You know, in a similar range.
I'm going to do that now because I'm getting psyched because main events are literally a week away. We're in Vegas. I'm
do you not want to? Okay,
No. I'm saying the opposite. I don't care. I'll put it out there, but this is the mindset I have to think. I can't think in terms of like, oh, I have 10 DC teams and now I'm adding my 11th. Oh, I need to get some shares of this guy. No, that's all out the window. I'm thinking this is like my only team. Yeah. So fire me with those. It'll be good practice.
Okay. So in the range, we think he's going to ascend a little bit. So I'm going to grab some guys that are going slightly ahead of him. So Shane Baz.
Well, now he's not in that range anymore though. Or is that part of the game?
Here? Okay. Okay. So you want to jump? Okay. So we'll go. Yeah. Okay. So him or Justin Verlander.
Oh man. Man, Verlander. It's close.
Okay. Okay. So see, this is already like the scene in Rounders where Teddy KGB's cracking open the Oreo and he's listening to it. Okay, him or Trevor Rogers? Carlos Rodon versus Trevor Rogers.
Man. It's tough with all those guys. It's just a matter of like things can change so quickly.
So it sounds like you're going to be out on him then. Right away. It sounds like you're kind of just already. Yeah. Because I like Luis Castillo and Blake Snell more than him now.
Yeah. So you won't be getting him.
Getting in.
You're out.
He's now, close to now, Snell. Yeah.
But now where would he go if it wasn't for the fatigue and the arm issues at the end of last year? Right. And coming off that season, even higher than Lance Lynn and Max Fried and those guys, he'd be in like the second round, like a Freddie Peralta range.
Yeah. Well, we'll put it this way. So I would take Trevor Rogers and Luis Castillo and Blake Snell over him, let's say, but I would take Carlos Rodon over Charlie Morton, who's going ahead of those guys, and Yu Darvish. So it's all preference, right? I wanted to see where you were at and I'm sure that's what the people want to hear. They want to, we can decipher and kind of give our points of views, but in the end, sometimes they want to know when they're looking at draft, it's like, well, I wonder who they would take here. And so it's good to give the people what they want.
What it really comes down to is, all right, if I'm in a competitive league, and I know I'm going to be taking some risks along the way. Maybe my SP2, SP3 may not be one that I want to take a risk with necessarily, unless I'm ready to back that up right away with some solid guys right after that. But then there isn't a lot of solidness after that. If I'm looking at like Ian Anderson, Logan Gilbert, like Luis Garcia, those are still kind of question marks. And if those guys have to step in and be my SP2 or my SP3, then I start to be a little worried. So that's my only concern. The upside is tremendous, right? I mean, it's, we saw he had a Robbie Ray-esque season last year. It's potential that if he plays the full year, he can repeat, but it all comes down to the injury and everything can change. I mean, he can shoot up. Here's the other factor, and sorry, a little bit on the rambling, like spring training starts tomorrow. When people are listening to this, everything's going to continue to go wild all over the place. As soon as Rodon's hitting like, a mile per hour over and he's just like striking guys out left and right, guess what? He goes up. It's going to be madness this next week.
Yeah, it is, but it's going to be exciting. I cannot wait. I'm really, really excited. You want to close this out with some of the in air quotes, maybe closers?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, before we do that real quick, just quick thoughts on Sonny Gray to the Twins and Chris Bassett with the Mets now.
Mm-hmm. I like both. I think, remember my concerns earlier about Bassett was if the team goes to poo and they trade away Olson and they trade away Chapman, that the clubhouse could kind of have a stench in it. And then maybe the motivation and, all that could just, it gets ugly. We've seen that with teams, but I don't have that fear anymore with Chris Bassett. I think he's going to a good landing spot, albeit the organization doesn't really know what they're doing with their pitchers, but Bass has been a healthy pitcher. So I think that he's okay. But if he's going to ascend, and I was kind of already out on him because of, like we said, maybe a Kyle Hendricks a little bit later. I would just take a Kyle Hendricks. So I don't have any exposure to him and I don't think I'll get any because he'll probably stay where he's at or ascend a little bit in ADP. But with Sonny Gray, I'm in. I've always liked him. I like him this year before the trade, and then he's going to get a better park factor all in all. So I think that he should jump up a little bit. If he doesn't, I'm going to be in on his current market. And that is at 175 ADP over the last 2 weeks.
Oh, I've been taking him like 140, 150 before the trade.
Gobble up.
And now, yeah, I'm in. This is a much better situation for him. Yeah.
Sexy like, SP3. Sexy.
Yeah, yeah. He's sexy. The strikeout rate has always been I don't know if magnanimous probably isn't the right word.
No, it's good. But no, it's dude. It's above average and it's solid.
Yeah, 28-30% in the last couple of years. Walks have always been an issue for him. And then you get him out of that ballpark. Keep in mind his two previous seasons. So he actually does not give up a lot of home runs, despite the fact that he's been playing in Great American since 2019. He has a 0.9 homers per nine over the course of his career. Granted, a good chunk of that was in Oakland. He had that one poor year in New York. But other than that, man, I mean, it's been pretty decent. And think back to 2019. He posted an ERA under three with basically, what was it, 175 innings and over 200 strikeouts, I believe. Yeah, something like that.
Yep. And on top of that,
205, yeah.
Mm-hmm. On top of that, obviously the season last year, it wasn't a shoulder that we saw in 2017. That hasn't cropped up again. So we're about 5 years removed from that. The 2016 forearm, those are the two injuries that you're going to be really concerned about when looking at Sonny Gray. Mm-hmm. Those are 5-6 years removed now. So missing a small amount of time with the strained back, which people were concerned about going into 2021. I know that people did mention that when Sonny Gray was being drafted in the third and fourth round, some people had some hesitancy. And then he missed 52 days. And some of it was with a back, but I think that it was right. Ribs, mm-hmm. groin, back. What is that? It's just kind of was that a mechanical issue that kind of just turned into some things? Was he overcorrecting because of uncomfortability in the back, inflammation? I don't want to see back 2 years in a row. That's the devil's advocate for me. That's just playing the other side of things would be, well, now we've seen him go on the IL twice because of a back. It's not good.
And I was just kind of thinking about it. So now I'm starting to get into that point where I'm starting to look at thinking about schedules and looking at who these teams are going to be playing a lot of. And just thinking about Sonny Gray going to Minnesota and man, some of these, like he's going to have some double digit strikeout games. He's going to go up against, the Tigers with, Robbie, Akil Badu, Grossman, Baez, 1-2-3, boom, boom, boom. Strike out the old man. Easy. Cleveland, done, but, and then he's going to go into face the White Sox one game. I'm sure they'll mash him. They got a bunch of studs. Another game. Seven innings, one run allowed and like nine Ks and just to crush him. So, and the White Sox are the one team to fear, but besides that, it's a pretty good division for him. So lots of Ks. I think he's underrated with Chris Bassett. And it's interesting how just you and I conversing, things start popping up in my head, things I didn't think about before, obviously haven't rehearsed, but like, so the thing on Chris Bassett is I had been out on the price. Thinking about him being in Oakland, didn't really think about him, the potential of him being traded, thought that he's been kind of a product of his great environment. And then with the team not providing run support, not a lot of wins there, maybe a little bit of drop in strikeout rate. I wasn't interested. So I have not been in drafting any Chris Bassett. Now he looks like a really solid sort of value, quote unquote, for where he's going for one specific reason. First of all, there's something about him, like his style, his personality is really likable. And now this is like intangibles. These are like wild things. But like, so you get a guy like Chris Bassett in, influenced by, and now a part of a crew that is Jacob DeGrom and Max Scherzer and Carlos Carrasco. Man, like that guy's going to always want to compete. He knows the other guys are going to go out there like shoving their best stuff, just like absolutely destroying. He's going to want to do his part. And that stuff like rubs off. If you're already talented and you have a little bit of an extra push or extra edge, that could really help. Bassett could be really good this year.
How about I throw one more bone to the Bassett hound? The strikeout rate, right? If you were talking to a really sharp or any DFS person that plays it on the daily, they're going to tell you that strikeouts are limited at Oakland Coliseum. The foul lines are much to the stands, and the range to catch a foul ball is much larger there, thus decreasing the amount of opportunities for strikeouts when a ball is put, you know what I'm talking about, right, buddy? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
It's like a fly ball. It goes up. Okay, well, it didn't go into the stands. It's still a two-strike count. Great, another opportunity for a strikeout. Whereas in Oakland, that's probably just going to be an out. Mm-hmm. Now, when you look at Citi Field, they rank fourth in that perspective, which is 5% above the mean, and the Oakland Coliseum is below the mean. So I think that, albeit he's not a huge strikeout person, I think if we're looking to just grab all of the positives, that's one that we have to put into factor as well, is mm-hmm. he's getting a positive in that. And I think the nerd and Derek Carty, if he sees, I'm sure he'll look at some things in that regard, and I'm sure he would agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense. Yeah, there's that. And then just like the intangibles of being in a part of a rotation like this, that like, man, yeah, I mean, why can't something, you know, learn some new tricks, you know, that this is the, you know, sort of novice in me, but like, or just the hopeful baseball romantic in me, like, what if there's something he learns from his teammates, from the best pitchers in baseball, that can maybe unlock another level and have him be an 11 Ks per nine guy? You just never know about this stuff. Like, it's everything we think about, we've been studying for, so many things are going to go out the window literally on opening day, right? Like, it's just crazy how this shit works.
Yeah, so we'll end up drafting like our last, whenever that is, our last main event, and then we'll start looking at DFS and looking to build our lineups, and we'll start looking at the actual lineups that are coming out and be all, why the hell is this guy, was he being drafted here, and look where he's hitting in the lineup. And it's all just like some of the simplest, dumbest things, and it's like, mm-hmm. why wasn't I thinking of that? Yep. You know, so I don't know. We all get scrambled up in galaxy brain ourselves, and I do it too. And it's, you know, it's just, there's a lot to, that's why fantasy baseball is science and fantasy football is math. One's just much harder than the other. And we roll with those punches and have a lot of fun doing it. I love getting beat up.
It's all good, man. It's all part of, yeah, exactly how you kind of roll with the punches, so to speak. So, you know, with the closers, I mean, by this, when we record next week, there are going to be a million new topics, million new sightings, trades, injuries, things that we'll talk about. But let's do this. Let's include our couple of closers, because they're not really that exciting anyways, into next week's. And let's talk a little bit about relievers and how some of the bullpens are shaping up next week. But anything else, anyone else that we're missing, or any final words?
Just so excited, man. Things have turned the corner for the best for us. You and I will be hanging out next week. We've got an FTN Fantasy Happy Hour, which is your pride and joy. That is something that you have done for a countless amount of years at the Vidara. You have people come together and hang out around the bar. And, you know, the family at FTN has been nice enough to kind of foot the bill for an hour or so for guests that decide to show up. We're not going to do it all night until, you know, 1 a.m. or anything like that and go hard. But it is really cool to see that come together again. You and I, we have to have some brunch like we usually do. So I'm looking forward to that. I'll see you in the main event room, the ballroom in the Bellagio, mm-hmm. for that as well.
That I also do a Carlos Rodon velocity over under 97 on the slider or something for his first spring training start. Sound good?
If that happens, the ADP goes up 15 to 30.
Man, this is fun. I can't wait. Everybody just remember to really be, I guess, careful of what you see in spring training. If you are drafting in the next few days, make sure you you take a step back and look at the overall picture, what you've been thinking about before this player, and don't let kind of what you're seeing kind of right there on the spot without taking team context and injury history and all those things in your whole repertoire before making a decision, before making moving a player up tremendously up or down. So we'll talk to y'all next week. Very happy to talk baseball again. So for Matthew Davis, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. And we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with Matthew Davis and Vlad Sedler. Make sure to follow your host on Twitter at @MattyWood_ and @RotoGut. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.